Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure.
I'm so excited right now.
Me too.
All the movies that we listed in our last episode, and that's not the one we picked, but that's okay. I'm just excited to be here with you in this moment, drinking our... What's the vibe, Liv?
The vibe is a California red wine for a film about California.
California. This one is called California Bold.
A bold wine for a bold California film. That's just to be specific, the film is set in California. Not like, which again, that doesn't narrow it down. All films are California films, most of them.
True.
But you'll see what we mean in a minute.
Yeah. So yeah, how are you feeling? I'm feeling great.
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling a little betrayed right now.
Why is that?
Because of the fun fact we just found out.
Oh, yeah. We did just find out a fun fact. I feel like we just need to dive straight into talking about this movie because we're going to have so many offshoots based on this movie.
That's 100%
true. Okay, but by the way, this movie, I pulled out my DVD basket that lives under my coffee table. And for the first time, I just let Liv, like, just peruse and decide what movie this week we were going to watch, whether it was going to be something that she loved or hated, and not surprisingly, you picked something that we both loved.
Yes, I did.
What is the movie for this week?
The movie for this week is The Mask of Zorro, starring Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, who has lied to me my entire childhood.
Do tell us the fun fact you just learned.
That woman is a Welsh woman.
Straight.
From Wales. A straight Welsh woman. Her mother is Irish.
I was going to say straight up Welsh.
Straight up Welsh. I Googled it. I was like, yeah, she's definitely Hispanic. Is she, like, American? Is she of Mexican descent? Is she, like, Colombian? Where is she from? Googled it. Dad is from Wales, mom is from Ireland.
So,
and I feel betrayed. She's like born in Wales. I have spent my entire life thinking she was Latina
because
of this film.
I'm almost I guess I have to rewatch this because I don't know if we are supposed to infer that her parents in this film are Latina, or if they are
Spaniards, aren't they?
Well, that's what I thought, but are they like?
Maybe they're not. I don't know.
Are they from Spain? Is the question? It, like, there's a lot of questions that I have about that. So I'm kind of curious.
Really remember? Of all the places in the world where she could be from, nothing against Wales. It seems like a lovely country. And
Welsh people are fantastic people.
The only thing better than the people themselves are the beautiful accents with which they say nice things.
Mm-hmm.
But
not really.
She is straight up Welsh.
Yep.
And I'm really upset about it.
Yep. I was just talking to you about this, but I will also shout out to other movies that I've seen recently. Just saw a 2003 movie with her and George Clooney from the Coen Brothers called Intolerable Cruelty.
I like the Coen Brothers a lot.
I liked it a lot. I don't think we'll watch it on this channel, but it's like I had never heard of it, but I really enjoyed it. So, like, if you like the Coen Brothers and you like Catherine Zeta-Jones, like,
Coen Brothers are kind of hard to bring into this channel. Like, The Mask of Zorro is a really fun film, but we can critique it for being, like, super 90s, which is part of why we chose this one as a follow-up to The Mask.
Yes.
Keeping with that 90s theme.
Wait, was this the 90s?
Yeah. Yeah, this was super nice, right?
This was 90s.
Oop, sorry. Things falling over. Can y'all hear us? Sorry. There we go. We're good.
Oh, darn it. The discount rack I bought this DVD off of has put a sticker over the place where maybe okay, I could hold see on. What year this
hold on.
Out.
I'm Googling it. Like 90% of our... We're so unprepared. 90% of this podcast is just me going, I'm going to Google it.
This is true. I should have... Ooh.
Oh, and it's the mask of Zorro. And we just watched the mask. Uh-huh. I didn't even think of that.
I'm really disappointed in us. This might be the most disappointed in us I've ever been.
We haven't even had that much wine. It's 1998. This counts.
Oh, yeah. This absolutely counts. I just wasn't... I was off by a couple years.
How old were you?
5. I don't think I saw this till I was...
I was give or take 6. What month are you...
I'm May.
May.
Yeah.
Your birthday's coming up.
It is. I'm a maybe.
Fun. You're gonna be 28?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm so like 6 months older than you.
These are the last 2 months where I get to go, I'm 27 years old, I've no money and no prospects, and I'm already a burden on my parents, and I'm frightened. Because as soon as I turn 28, then I'm the same age as Anne Elliot. So that's when my life's gonna turn around, baby.
There's not any fun quotes about 28.
No.
My favorite thing about being 27 was
every
time somebody would ask me how old I was, I'd be like, I'm 27.
If you don't know what that is, it's a Vine. Go watch it. It's great.
Everyone watching this, or listening to this, watching, is probably old enough to remember Vine.
This is true.
Most likely.
This is very true. Yeah.
Babe, happy 1 year.
I'm 27. Dude, I can't wait till we've been doing this podcast for a year and I get to go, hey babe, happy 1 year.
By then I'll be like, I'm 29. Couple of 30-year-olds goggling over Antonio Banderas. Nothing's changed.
I'm gonna be an 80-year-old woman, like chilling in my nursing home room, like goggling over Antonio Banderas.
This is the only movie that gives Interview with a Vampire Antonio Banderas a run for its money.
Oh, see, even though I don't like Spy Kids' dad.
You know what, though? You're not wrong.
Like, parachuting away from their wedding?
Mwah. You know what else I love about... Okay. I love... Ooh, train.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys can hear that. There's probably a train in the distance. Speaking of Spy Kids, I love Alan Cumming so much.
I have a strange relationship with Alan Cumming.
Really?
Yeah. It's like...
Have you ever seen the clips of him playing the MC in Cabaret?
No.
He's such a sleazebag and he's perfect. You've seen Cabaret, right?
We've established this. No, I have not seen
Cabaret. What? I always
that's
forget
why,
that
That's
about.
Why it's on the list for Musical Month.
That's right. We have to watch it during Musical Month, which will come up pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, but he's not in the movie Cabaret, but he was on Broadway and there's clips of it. And he's so good. And I have lots of feelings about him. So,
there's that. I find that, like, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of movies that he's in, but I like him.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I mentioned this months ago when we watched Dracula. A free book included with an Audible subscription is Dracula, with him as one of the readers, and Tim Curry as one of the other readers.
Ah, that's so good.
Yeah.
I love free Audible books. We're not sponsored. We're just nerds.
Yeah.
I have a funny story for you. I kind of told you this story, but speaking of Audible free books.
Yeah.
We just kind of talked about this. I love Castlevania. I'm obsessed with it, which automatically means that anyone who does voice in Castlevania is automatically one of my faves. And then on top of doing all kinds of things like Castlevania, this guy has also been in my favorite BBC show of all time, Robin Hood. Kind of an obscure one.
I know of what you speak.
Oh,
but
it was so good.
But I have not watched it yet, but I would like to.
It's not that good, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I would love to watch that with you.
Absolutely. You've seen Merlin, right? If you like Merlin, you can't Robin see Hood. It,
listeners, but I just put my hand over my chest.
She clutched her invisible pearls.
Like, you would think that I have not seen Merlin. Are you... Now, here is the funny thing with me and Merlin, though. If you want to talk about me being sheltered's not the right word, oblivious maybe as a child, I learned what Slash was not because I sought it out on my own, but because I told my friend I'd started watching Merlin, and she's like, "What do you think of Arthur and Merlin?" I'm like, "Yeah, they're great." She's like, "But like, what do you think of them?" I'm like, They're fine. I really like Arthur. He's really cute. But like, and I was not picking up, not getting it at all. I was even at the point where I was like, yeah, he and Gwen are super cute together. I was that far in the show. And she was like, "Sweetie, this is what the show's about." I was like, "No, it's not." But now, of course, going back and watching it, I'm like, oh yeah. Every time you go and talk to the dragon, and Merlin's like, "Dragon, what should I do?" He goes,
"The Slash Dragon."
Yeah, he goes, "Arthur, mostly."
Pretty much. Okay, so, first of all, Merlin, if you've never watched Merlin, Merlin is the gayest straight show I've ever seen in my life. It's like, here are two heterosexual men who are, like, canonically in love with each other.
It's true.
It was very confusing. I mean... the innuendos, and then they're like, and then like they put Arthur with Gwen, and he's like, "Guinevere, I love you so much." And they have as much. Gwen is a genuinely great actress.
Yeah,
I don't remember her actress's name. I don't really remember Arthur's actor either, but that his actor would have so much chemistry with Colin Morgan, who played Merlin. Yes. I remember him.
Yes.
And then he would turn around, and then the girl who played Guinevere would have so much chemistry with Colin Morgan.
Yeah.
And then they would have a scene together, just like two limp noodles, just
the
like...
The only time I remember having like a fluttery feeling with them was the first time he called her by her full name, and he was angry, and she was trying to walk away, and he called her by her name, and she stopped and turned around. And that was all it took for me to be like, "Huh, okay, they're a couple," because my gaydar was zero as a child. And so
it was, yeah, I was like, "Cool, he called her name." Anyways, where literally this show, he would be like, "Guinevere, my one true love." And then Merlin would like get a splinter and he'd be like, Merlin, are you hurt?
Yes.
Merlin, my love. Like
This is
the writers were like, "These are straight dudes."
This is all 100% true. Also, I kind of... Sometime we got to go rewatch Merlin because...
We do. It's so good.
I now have...
The ending sucks so much, though.
I now have such a deep love for Anthony Stewart Head because of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that I'm really curious to see if I watch Uther Pendragon any differently now that I have this deep love.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but kind of... We got way off topic, but
so off topic.
BBC Merlin, is similar in vibe to BBC Robin Hood, except for BBC Robin Hood is not very gay. Maid Marian is like a crime-fighting ninja, pretty much.
Okay.
And everyone's in love with her, and they are absolutely right in that decision.
Yeah.
And I was in love with the guy who played Robin Hood. And then my friend was in love with the guy who played the Sheriff of Nottingham, who was Richard Armitage. In full leather garb. Leather from head to toe. And at the time, I didn't get it.
You have to stop.
And okay,
this can't be real.
Oh my god, okay. Okay, girl,
hold on.
Can I tell
Where's
you?
My phone? Oh, it's right here. It's recording.
Can I tell you?
I'm looking up pictures.
Oh,
go
it's
ahead.
So good. Can I?
Tell me more. Tell
can
me
I
more.
Can I tell you? So I kind of got on like a Richard Armitage kick the other day. I watched him. I got a subscription to digital theater, and I watched him in The Crucible. And I can't believe I'm saying this because, like, I mean... Daniel Day-Lewis is John Proctor.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Richard Armitage's John Proctor better.
accident. Yeah. Sorry, I just found pictures.
Right? The only thing better about Daniel Day-Lewis's John Proctor is his "because it is my name" speech. But Richard Armitage's everything else was a better John Proctor.
Interesting. Hot take. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that.
So anyways, back to my Audible story. That was a real big segue. Sorry, guys.
Sorry. I just ended up going on a giant Merlin tangent. And
no, I'm really sorry. I'm glad you did. Okay, but so I'm sitting there minding my own business, and I'm trying to go to sleep. And I'm like, just, I wanted to take a nap, but I like couldn't. My body was so tired, but my brain would not shut up. And I was like, I need like talking or something in the background to quiet my mind. And I was flipping through Audible, and I was like, you know whose voice would soothe me to sleep? Richard Armitage. Is there any free Audible book, like free with my subscription, that he reads? Up pops The Velveteen Rabbit. I think I kind of told you about this the other day.
Yep.
Girl, when I tell you, I'm like getting emotional just thinking about it.
Please do not cry.
I cried so hard. I didn't sleep. I just sat there and I cried. And then my husband got home and he was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I listened to The Velveteen Rabbit. And he went, what's The Velveteen Rabbit? So then I tried to tell him the story of The Velveteen Rabbit. It took me 30 minutes because I kept like, I would be like, and then this skin horse said that children, child can make you real. And I was like weeping and he was like, the what? And I was like, the skin horse, don't worry about it. And then, and I got to the part, I like finally composed myself and I was okay. And then I was like, and then the bunny gets thrown out because of scarlet fever and they're gonna burn him. But then he has a single tear and it blooms into a flower, and out of the flower comes a fairy. And I was like really holding it together, and I was like, and the fairy takes him and makes him a real bunny, and was like weeping. And my husband was like, are you okay? And I was like, no. But anyway, so if you ever want a fun, I won't say fun, if you ever want to have your heart ripped out of your chest and squished, highly recommend Velveteen Rabbit, specifically with Richard Armitage reading it, because he does voices.
Oh
God, and his little Velveteen Rabbit voice killed me.
Have you ever heard him read poetry?
Yes.
Yeah, I have some tracks of him reading poetry. Oh my God, it's incredible.
Him, and you know what, Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't, I used to be so attracted to him. He doesn't quite do it for me as much
anymore. His voice still does it for me.
But his Ode to a Nightingale by John Keats is the prettiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So good. Mm-hmm. So good.
I think this was the once in future tangent.
This was the once in future tangent.
We went there and back again with Richard Armitage.
We did. We did.
Except Richard Armitage didn't come
back. I was about to say that. Oh, no. No, Richard Armitage. Poor Thorin Oakenshield.
He was too good for that
he
movie.
He was too good. Him and
all of the hobbits were all too good for that movie.
Martin Freeman was Bilbo Baggins.
Yes.
He was so good.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, how are they going to find somebody who can be as good as
we need to have a
Hobbit party.
Do you mind if I polish
finish off the wine?
The Bold Move California.
Please do.
The Jaguar Explosion. I gotta drive home at some California. Point, so please do. So yeah, we just need to have a Hobbit month. My good friend Matthew Hall, who has listened to our podcast before.
Shout out, Matthew.
He is the single biggest Tolkien nerd I've ever met. And he expressed interest. He told me, he's like, I want to sit down and watch these with you.
Can we have a guest?
I was going to propose, whenever we do this, he needs to be present.
I'm down.
Because he's just curious to relive the experience. So
I have
excuse me, sorry.
Unfortunate criticisms of The Hobbit.
So do I.
But
yeah, it would be hard not to just sort of restate the entire magnificent Lindsay Ellis series about it. Mm-hmm. But if you are curious about the making of those movies and why Richard Armitage was too good for those movies and why, as I said, every actor who played a dwarf was too good for those movies.
Speaking of dwarves and Castlevania, Graham McTavish, who is one of the dwarves, is Dracula.
Good for him.
And he's really good. So, yeah, like random hobbits.
He was also an Outlander.
He was an Outlander. Yeah. He's got that new show that I'm kind of interested in watching called Men with Kilts.
My friend got me the book that it's based off of called Clanlands, and I'm really excited to read it.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. So.
Okay. I'm excited.
Very excited.
Speaking
of excited, since we're
segue
nigh 20 minutes into this recording, and I think we are exactly 20
minutes, nice.
If you've listened to our discussion of the shows that we love so far, so we found out this movie came out in 1998. I meant to look up who directed this in the minutes that we were discussing all of this. This was a... Oh! It does not have... Oh, Martin Campbell was our director.
Martin Campbell.
I believe I saw this for the first time when I was like...
Dude, this guy directed Casino Royale. Sorry, I'm shocked.
Not good movies.
The Green Lantern.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah, that is unfortunate.
Here's what I will say. I watched The Green Lantern once. Very poorly written movie. I think this man directs action scenes very well.
Yeah, that's fair.
As we will see in this movie. I watched this movie for the first time when I was 8 or 9. This was always on TBS.
Always.
And much like The Mask. Mm-hmm. I remember in every trailer for it, they showed the scene where he cuts her dress off, and I remember just being like, oh. And so I don't think I was allowed to watch it, but I did watch it on TBS. And so,
I think that's a really good scene. That's not even a hot take.
That's not a hot take.
That implies that other people don't think the exact same thing. It's just a good scene.
I have never met a person who didn't like this movie. Who has seen this movie.
The sexual tension, though, in that scene.
The sexual tension in this entire freaking
Can we talk about
movie?
How disappointed I am that I've never, had a sword fight with a love interest?
Why has no one ever placed a sword under my chin and tilted my head up to tisk 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 and then steal something from me, but
boys,
I'm kind of cool with it.
Boys, take note. The way to Lizzie's heart is with a rapier to her chin.
Oh yeah, it can't be
as a euphemism for anything, just straight up an actual sword fight.
Like,
sorry, I regretted saying that as soon as I did. Somewhere William Shakespeare is like,
it can't be one of those two-handed great sword deals. No,
that's not sexy.
No. A rapier.
Yep.
So I don't even know what to talk about with this movie until we watch it, because I feel like when we're done, I'm just gonna sit here and list every moment that I love in this movie.
Okay, well, quick recap for those of you who live under a rock and haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. First of all, go watch it. Second of all, this is a movie about the former Zorro, who's played by Anthony Hopkins.
A brilliant performance.
Who looks really good in this movie. Anyways, passing on the mask of Zorro, hence why it's got the name, and also the title of Zorro, to Antonio Banderas.
Which, if you think about it, for this being the movie that's coming out, was kind of a brilliant move for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
So, number one, it allows it to be a kind of revamp for a series that never really was like a big series, mm-hmm. you know? I mean,
did Anthony Hopkins play?
No.
Okay. I was like, wait, what?
Just revamping like the concept of Zorro in the public mm-hmm. consciousness. And so because you have to sort of revamp it, but you don't want to do like your standard fare origin story. Mm-hmm. And so to kind of give it a little bit more of that hero's journey arc by having him being passing on the mantle, mm-hmm. it's both an origin story, but also can be a revenge plot, but also can be a hero's journey arc with the hero learning from the mentor, and you get the multi-generational thing and the found family thing. Like I just think it works on so many levels to have the story structured this way.
It does. Even Catherine Zeta-Jones, Miss Welsh over here betraying me, is wonderful in this film.
She is.
She is.
She's really
objectively
good.
She's good.
Biggest shift away from the movie last week is that we actually have a well-written
love interest.
Well-performed love interest.
She's like complex and cool.
Yes.
I have not seen this movie since I was like 13 though. So we will revisit.
I watched this movie just maybe within this last 6 months.
Really?
Because I've been rewatching all of my comfort movies.
Okay, yeah.
And this
yeah.
is one of them.
Okay.
And that's why I'm so excited to watch it again, because this movie just makes me happy.
I'm glad it still makes you happy, because having not seen it for a long time, sometimes when you have a movie that you love as a child and you go back and watch it, sometimes you're like, oh, it's my comfort movie. And sometimes you're like, I remember this being so much better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to hear that it still stacks up for you, and I'm hoping it'll do the same
it
for me.
It really, really does.
But anyways, without further ado.
Yeah, we should probably get started.
We should do it. Mask of Zorro!
Cue Jaguar roaring over an explosion.
Well,
the next day.
The next day.
Let's not be deceptive. That movie was much longer than either of us remembered it being.
It was way longer than I remember it being.
Yeah.
So we finished it, and it was like 11:30, and I live like 40 minutes from Lizzie, so I was like, we could do it, and Lizzie was like, no, we can't. You need to go home.
Yeah.
So we were here the next day.
Yeah.
Finishing up.
Yep. I'm wondering if there's going to be like a buzzer noise in the background of going off. It's post work, but there's still sometimes like
weird noises.
So, but
we'll just pause and cut them or something.
Probably
make it work.
Sure.
Okay, so I gotta say, I was worried going in that it wouldn't be as good as I remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was so much better than I remember it.
Right?
Like, why don't we talk about it as a society? Why is this not the movie that we're all still obsessed with?
Yes. I don't understand how in a world where rightfully
the first... I just kicked her.
Podcast over. I don't understand how in a world where rightfully there's so much love for, like, first Pirates of the Caribbean, and now this big resurgence of the Mummy.
Right.
Like, why is no one talking about The Mask of Zorro?
I mean, I gotta say, like, objectively, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
The score, beautiful. The costumes, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The stunt work, awesome. The cinematography was really solid and varied and complex mm-hmm. and brightly colored. And
it's like, well written.
There was not a scene that was like ugly to look at. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes even in the best movies, there's like meh looking scenes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just like have to convey plot and, mm-hmm. you know, but like this did even like exposition kind of scenes well.
Yeah. I'll say, for it being, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
But by the end of it, unlike a lot of other 2 hour, 15 minute movies that have been coming out lately, there's nothing that I would cut. Everything is there very purposefully, mm-hmm. very meaningfully.
It didn't feel long.
Yeah.
Which is why I guess I forgot how long it was.
So, I didn't notice this until watching it with you last night, but when we were talking about how good it was, one of the things that I think it does very, very well is every single fight scene is so well choreographed and planned. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there's a scene when he is invading Don Rafael's manor, mm-hmm. and all these guards are chasing him. And it's one of those classic, like, he would stand in the middle and they would come up one at a time and fight him. But he jumps up in the middle of this giant circular table. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that they're not all rushing him at the same time.
Right, they can't all fit on the table. And that's that small change of verticality
mm-hmm.
makes the fight believable.
Yeah. But then the ones that aren't fighting him aren't in the background. They're mm-hmm. out of shot.
Yeah.
Which is why that works. And I feel like there's such... That just doesn't really happen anymore, and mm-hmm. you don't get these beautifully, beautifully crafted fight scenes and stunt scenes. And
right.
If we're looking for problems with this movie, there's moments when you can look at people and go, that's not Antonio
Banderas.
They're
doing, like, a flamenco dance, and they clearly, they, like, got some, like, professional flamenco dancer and put him in an Antonio Banderas wig and called it a day.
Yeah.
And it's clearly not him.
But even, and sometimes you do have that with, like there's a scene where he's, you know, jumping over and flipping off of a horse, and it's clearly and like not Antonio Banderas. Yeah. But it doesn't matter because it's such a well-done action adventure yeah. scene. And I would love to see more adventure movies mm-hmm. start popping back up that aren't, you know, directed towards children. Because this movie yeah. is clearly not directed towards children.
Right. I mean, and I think thematically, it works really well. I think, like, all the plot points connect beautifully. I think that all the female characters, despite the fact that they don't have a ton of agency overall, and there's just not that many of them, like, they still feel like real women.
Yes.
And not, like... Cameron Diaz in The Mask.
This movie breaks the Bechdel test.
It does. Yep. It does. I was actually about to say that.
Or I guess passes the Bechdel test is what I should
say. Yeah, it passes. It passes because the woman who cared for her
mm-hmm.
Tries to give her a gift and starts saying how she raised her as a child.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it really, really does. Mm-hmm. And like, Elena is, like, a really complex woman.
Yeah.
And the bad guy is a total creep. And it's framed that his, like, weird possessiveness of the woman in his life
yeah.
is a bad quality.
You lost it when De La Vega broke into his office.
And there's a picture.
The portrait of her.
Of Esperanza on the yeah. wall. Oh, I forgot. I had yeah. forgotten all about that part. And that's so creepy.
You lost your mind.
That's so creepy. A recap for those of you who've never seen this film. You should go watch it, but spoiler. So the original Zorro, Diego is his name, right?
Diego de la Vega.
Yeah, de la Vega. His wife, Esperanza de la Vega, I guess at some point rejected the bad guy,
yes.
Rafael.
Yes.
I forget his last name. But he, like, never got over her. He was, like, really creepy and obsessive. So she goes on, she marries Diego, and they have a baby named Elena, and Rafael tries to kill Diego, and she jumps in front of
yeah.
his gunshot and dies to save Zorro, which is a way more metal way than I thought they were going to kill her.
Right.
I guess there is a lot more female agency than I thought. I mean...
There really is.
For a 90s movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so afterwards, like, Diego and Rafael fight. Rafael wins. He imprisons Diego and then steals Diego's baby and, like, concocts this whole fantasy where he was, like, married.
He raises her as his own.
And tells her mom is Esperanza.
Yeah.
Like,
and that she died in childbirth,
yeah.
which is a lie.
There's no secret. Like, he's like, this is your mother, and it's actually her mother. But
yeah.
he's like, and I am your father. And he just acts like Diego, like, didn't exist, really.
Yeah.
It's weird and super messed up.
There's He escapes imprisonment, mm-hmm. And is trying to get revenge, and so that's why he starts training Alejandro, who's played by Antonio Banderas. And yeah. That's who becomes the new Zorro. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I said when we were recording the first part, this story setup works on so many levels. Mm-hmm. Because you can have an origin story. You can have not one, but two compelling vengeance plots. Mm-hmm. Because Alejandro has his own vengeance that he's trying to get.
There's this, like, blonde American soldier.
General Love, or Captain Love. His last name is Love. Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But his, Alejandro's brother is, captured by Captain Love, and then instead of being taken alive, kills himself, and Captain Love decapitates him, and, like, does some really messed up stuff with his head, so... That, motivates Alejandro to go get his vengeance.
It's kind of... He's a fantastic bad guy.
He's a really, really good bad
Both
guy.
Both bad guys in this are good in their own ways, mm-hmm. and very different.
Yeah. And you hate them both. And then, of course, they're both very greedy. And then that, nice little symbolism at the end where, a pile of gold kills them both.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of fun. They, fall to their death, crushed by all these, gold bricks.
Yep. We noticed this as we're watching mm-hmm. it. There are nods to absolutely every big adventure movie.
That came before it, yeah.
That came before it. There's, I was keeping count. We said that you've got Count of Monte Cristo.
Princess Bride.
Old Zorro movies. Mm-hmm. Ben-Hur.
Yeah, there is a Ben-Hur reference.
There's a Ben-Hur reference.
And then there's just kind of generic, old, pirate movies too that kind of get a nod, very Laurence Olivier kind of no, that's not right. Errol Flynn
is a little more swashbuckly than Lawrence.
I was like, wait, Laurence Olivier is like Hamlet, never mind, wrong person. At least I caught myself. Speaking of catch yourself, this is a complete segue, but I need to clear the room. I need to explain something.
Yes, go ahead.
A month and a half ago we did Muppet Treasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I straight up was like, Tim Curry, rest in peace. He's alive.
I can't remember if we already clarified this.
Maybe we did.
Having this moment, I'm wondering if we did.
Maybe we did.
But I am going to go on record and say that you said that, and I thought to myself...
You just believe me.
Well, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, he's died since, recently, and I didn't know about it. Well, I don't want to sit here and be surprised that that happened, so I'm just going to smile and nod. And continue. And, yeah.
Well, at least I'm pretty sure he's alive.
He's alive.
And if we've already clarified that, then this is just a double clarifying moment. Because I feel dumb. And Tim Curry deserved better. So.
Air cleared.
Air cleared. Sorry, Tim Curry. We love you. Back to Zorro.
So we were talking about... we're going to have to talk about this at some point,
mm-hmm.
but I spend at least 75-80% of that movie just ogling over both Antonio Banderas and Anthony Hopkins, and I know that Catherine Zeta-Jones does it for so many people.
She is objectively one of the prettiest people in this film that I have ever seen in my life.
She is gorgeous.
It doesn't make sense. Her hair defies gravity. I want it. I wish my hair looked like that.
It's never out of place. She goes through a giant sword fight, and it's still hanging there perfectly. It's also, we talked about how we appreciated how it was up for the party, but then mm-hmm. they have this, passionate flamenco dance, and it falls down in places, and it's so realistic. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, I don't know how old Anthony Hopkins was in this, but the fact...
I don't know, but he's hot.
Yeah!
He's really hot.
He's a very, very...
I never thought I would say that about Anthony Hopkins.
I kept periodically reaching over and grabbing your leg and being like, just wait. And one of the moments is he's down in, the training cellar, the bat cave, if you will, the fox cave, if you will, waiting for young Zorro to come back, and there's a candelabra with six candles on it, and he has a whip in his hand.
And he's just
whipping out each of the candles one by one.
He said last night, I was like, yes, daddy, and then you were like, see, Poppy.
I said, see, Poppy, which I should not have said, but I did.
It was so bad. Oh, I had one complaint about the movie, and then in thinking about it, I understand why they might have made this choice.
Yes.
But I still don't like it.
Yes.
My one complaint about the movie is when they choose baby Elena, when they cast that tiny little baby to play Catherine...
A beautiful baby.
Beautiful baby to play Catherine Zeta-Jones as an infant. Darker complexion, dark hair, dark eyes, and then she grows up to be Catherine Zeta-Jones, and you're like, sure, whatever. The baby at the end, the baby that Antonio Banderas and, well, I guess Alejandro, his character, and Elena, Catherine Zeta-Jones' character, the movie ends, they've clearly gotten married and had a child.
And I was like, what is this blue-eyed baby?
He has, like, blue-eyed blonde hair. And I was like looking at Antonio Banderas and then looking at Catherine Zeta-Jones and looking back at Antonio Banderas with his really dark, beautiful eyes. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, who made this casting decision? And then I realized at the very end, I think I know why they did it. Because I think the baby's not supposed to look like his parents. He's supposed to look like his grandfather. Because they show you over and over and over again that... Diego has blue eyes.
That's
Anthony Hopkins has blue
that's
eyes.
That's true.
I still don't like it.
Yeah.
But I kind of had this epiphany of like, oh, that might be why they went with that decision.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it was dumb. But yeah, I think that's my only real complaint.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot.
I said, you know, this movie stays focused well on what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite scenes is at the beginning of the movie because it's, it's a flashback to the older Zorro when he's younger, like his last ride, and he saves four innocent civilians from being executed for no reason. But there's this giant crowd there, and they're all, like, cheering for him and chanting for him. Mm-hmm. And they actually help him because they, like, overrun some of the guards. Mm-hmm. And so it really gave the Californian people a lot of agency. And I guess the movie was kind of trying to explore, like, them being, like, having their spirits worn down, having that taken away. But they just lose a lot of that agency by the end to the point that, like...
Yeah.
The plot is that the bad guys have had this illegal mine and they have to bury all the evidence, which means that they're going to bury all of the workers in the mine. Yeah. And they're just like locked in cages.
And you're like, how did like five evil bad guys lock all of these people dudes in cages?
Did they just say, hey, come stand in here? And they
it doesn't make any sense.
It felt a little bit,
I mean, it's possible. It just, cause like, it felt like we didn't see. We never saw it happen, and so it just felt like, you know, these people were ready to have, like, an uprising. And granted, it's been, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
So the political landscape could have changed. These people could be worn down. There could be a legitimate reason why there's no, like, uprising and why they're, like, so much more, like, dominated by Raphael and his compatriots. But... we don't see it, and so it feels kind of like meh development, like something was lost, but there wasn't an explanation for why. Which, you know, from a storytelling perspective, I think it's just nice when things make sense.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, my gut instinct is they were like, oh, well, this guy was bad, but now time has passed, and we need to make him more villainous, so we have to raise the stakes.
Yeah.
So instead of killing four innocent people, he's going to kill, like, a couple hundred.
Which I had no problem with. I actually thought that was, like, a very good,
plot. It just felt unjustified, and it felt, like, because when he was going to kill those four innocent people, there were all of these Were they they weren't Californians at that point, because it was still part of Mexico at the beginning.
So
yes. They were, like, Mexican citizens who were, like, enraged that he was doing this injustice, and then at the end, like, there's nobody.
Yeah. So that's like a little complaint, but it works for the story. Mm-hmm. It lets you have this heroic figure who then, like, inspires the people, mm-hmm. Which that's always what Zorro has been supposed to be. There we go.
Sorry.
I knew there was going to be one.
Yep.
But if I'm sitting here listing all the things that I liked in this movie, uh-huh. I would be here way too long. I would be talking about the clever horse, the flamenco dance, the moment when all the guards turn around and he's standing there with a cannon between his legs and he holds up a torch. I'd be talking about... Okay, I said this earlier and I don't think you knew what I meant. When there are explosions in this movie...
Yes.
In the back of the explosions, there is the audio of, like, a jaguar or a something, sort of cheetah, I don't know. There's a big cat roar in the background.
It works so well. I gotta say, like, not just the explosions, but just throughout the film, mm-hmm. I was impressed with the sound mixing. Yeah. It was really good. The sound mixing, the editing, the sound effects were all great.
The twang of the swords.
Also... This is something that I noticed, and it could be that I just missed it. It's very possible. But when I watch action movies, I always listen for the Wilhelm scream.
There may have been one, but I don't remember what it was.
I didn't catch it. And honestly... Yeah.
It's okay.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you've never heard the Wilhelm scream...
It's that...
Here, hold on. I'll play it.
I'm sure we have
it. I'll play the sound effect. I'm sure you'll be able to hear it, but...
It's in
every movie.
Action movie.
And sometimes I think it's fun to have it.
Yeah.
But
you don't really need it. You know why you don't need it? Mm-hmm. Because Three Finger Jack, or whatever his name is, screams in his final moments as he rides down a minecart with a pickaxe in the air to kill the man who killed his friend.
Yeah, you don't... Here, I'm going to play you the Wilhelm scream. Actually, it's probably going to have an ad.
There it is.
I'll play it one more time. So that comes from, like, a very, very old movie.
It was a Western.
It was a Western from, like, the 30s, I think, or 40s. And that scream has just kind of become so popular in cinema. It's just used for everything. Yep. So if you have never noticed that noise before, go through and watch all your favorite movies. Yep. I guarantee you'll find it in, like, 99% of them. But it was kind of nice to skip it this once.
Yeah.
Unless we just missed it. If you find a Wilhelm scream in The Mask of Zorro, let us know.
It's still a good movie. There's a fight in a very thin hallway that has mirrors at both ends of the hallway.
What a cinematic flex.
What a flex. I know you were like, that's gross. But the scene... I won't even spoil it because it's worth if people haven't seen it to get the shock.
Yeah.
There's a scene.
We always spoil everything, so you know it's gonna be good.
When Alejandro is confronting the man who killed his brother, mm-hmm. and he offers him a drink of something absolutely foul, but he drinks it anyway and, like, says, like, salud or whatever to his health, mm-hmm. and he drinks it anyway, and it's the most metal scene in any movie
really
I've ever
is.
Seen. And it's so good.
I just really love Antonio Banderas.
He is so charming. There's a line in this when Diego, the mm-hmm. older Zorro, says, "I must teach you something beyond your beach, charm." And I was like, "That's impossible," because
Antonio Banderas is the most charming man.
There's three scenes I think of. The first scene when he meets Elena, mm-hmm. and she, like, gasps and she sees him trying to steal a horse, and he's like, "Be careful, senorita. There are dangerous men about." And I was sold. Absolutely sold.
Immediately.
Then there's the scene where he's hiding in a confessional and she comes into the confession booth and confesses about how she had lustful thoughts for this bandit man she saw earlier.
Who is, of course, Alejandro. The exact scene we were just talking about.
And then when he introduces himself at the party and she doesn't know that it's him... He does this whole, like, magic trick thing where he makes a flower appear.
That would have won me over.
Worked on me, absolutely.
Instantly.
Sign me up, betroth me away. I am down.
I'd be like, Dad, this one. I choose him.
Daddy, I love him. Yeah, he is the single most charming man.
He is.
Oh, my Lord.
It's... Yeah, I just, I don't even know what to say about Antonio Banderas. So there's two actors that I kind of, they're not necessarily comparable as actors,
mm-hmm.
per se. But there's two actors that for some reason kind of have similar, like, sorry.
Jeez Louise.
We get it. There's two actors that kind of have some similar, like, facial structures, I guess, to me.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Banderas and Orlando Bloom kind of have that same swashbuckly, pretty boy.
You know what it is?
Late 90s, early 2000s, big brown eye.
It's the hair in these movies. There's something about that length of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he, oh, when he runs away and, like, runs up a wall and swishes his cloak away, I was like, yes. Okay, Orlando Bloom.
You know what, though? They also both have kind of big, like, brown eyes.
Yeah.
Like, dreamy, really
very dreamy.
Big. They're kind of big for, like, a man, too. They're,
yeah.
Like, very, like, soft, dreamy eyes, mm-hmm. and this very masculine face.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. It works. It works for me.
Yeah.
Every time.
So, I said I could sit here and say good things about this movie all day. I will keep this as my last one. I said in the beginning that I really, when we were watching it, when Alejandro is mourning the loss of his brother and drinking, mm-hmm. and not in a good place. Oh, there was another Princess Bride one. You were like, oh, hello, Inigo.
I am waiting for this evening.
I said, okay, he really is, like, the NPC in the bar who you fight early in the game, who really is just drunken and nobody, but he thinks he can take you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this movie really progresses his character, mm-hmm. well, because the first time that he goes out and pretends to be Zorro, he really is, like, almost... He's successful, but mm-hmm. he's being very foolish and headstrong and kind of making a little bit of a mockery of it. But then by the end, like, he 110% is Zorro.
I think what's fun, too, is the way they set it up is that you know as the audience the whole time that Diego is looking for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he teaches Alejandro as though he should put his emotions aside in order to be an effective Zorro. And so then what we kind of get is this, like, at the end, we kind of see that, like, the student has surpassed the teacher.
Yeah.
And I think that moment's really powerful.
Yeah.
When Alejandro's primary motivator is saving the people.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, I might have one critique. Because they kind of establish that he cares more about the people in the mines than he does getting his vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
But then he spends a whole lot of time fighting Captain Love and getting his vengeance. So I
yeah.
feel like if that fight had maybe been more forced,
mm-hmm.
to where he was, like, trying to save everyone, but Captain Love wouldn't let him alone, so now it became more of a duty to his people,
yeah.
instead of a personal vendetta,
yeah.
I think it actually would have made the thematic message of the film a little stronger.
Yeah.
But that's really nitpicky, because honestly, I am okay. Like, I don't feel like it has to be changed to be good.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
All right, final rating.
I give this I'm trying to think. 10 out of 10 10 out of 10 shots of a black Andalusian horse rearing back in the
yes.
sun.
I give this 6 out of 6 candles being extinguished one after the other with a whip.
Yes.
3 out of 3 dramatic sword strokes in a Z format.
Yes.
It's a treasure.
It's
for sure.
Perfect movie.
Yep.
I think we have decided that we're going to do our, well, since Muppet Month, mm-hmm. we're going to do another
theme month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing?
We had kind of 2 in the books. I guess next up is...
I think we're going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cinderella Month.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch a bunch of different versions of Cinderella. We have pre-recorded one episode when it dropped on Disney Plus, but the Brandy Cinderella, the Roger and Hammerstein one that was produced by Whitney Houston, mm-hmm. That one will be coming out next week, I guess.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure out the order.
We know it'll come out sometime that month, but
yeah, we'll watch that. We'll watch the Disney live action Cinderella. Mm-hmm. It's not trash, but I feel like maybe we should watch the OG Cinderella. If we have time.
We talked about possibly doing, maybe we'll get a Cinderella story in there somewhere. Mm-hmm.
And then we talked, I don't know if we'll get to all of these, but we also talked about Ever After.
We're going to watch Ever After.
I have a personal vendetta about Ever After. I'll explain later.
It's wonderful and I love it and we're going to watch it.
Okay. And then maybe Ella Enchanted. I feel like we shouldn't watch the Disney, like, OG Cinderella.
No, I
feel like it's too good.
It is. I feel like we'll end up talking about it when we watch the live action.
It might even be fun for us to just watch it for comparison purposes, but I don't think it needs an episode. We're just going to be like, it's a great movie, moving on.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like Ever After is going to be a fun one. I have stories. I have nightmarish stories for that. I haven't seen Ella Enchanted in a long time, and I feel like I'm going to hate it.
I can already tell you that I'm going to enjoy watching Ella Enchanted with you, even if I don't enjoy watching Ella Enchanted.
Okay.
And I will have fond memories flashing back to elementary and middle school with Ella Enchanted. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, so stick around. Join us next week for Cinderella Month. And... have courage and be kind, I guess.
Yeah. And go watch Zorro.
Go watch Zorro.
It will be a balm to your soul.
Before we dive in to some meh movies.
Yeah.
Bye. Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at LivinLizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trash you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!